this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. I'm Judge Mormon. To my right is Judge Lance. To my left is Judge Scholin. And we're here today in the matter of Robert J. Ingram versus R. James Nicholson, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 032196. Would counsel for both parties please introduce themselves for the record?
Robert Scholin, Honorable Secretary of Veterans Affairs. To my right at counsel table is Mary Ann Flynn, Principal Deputy Assistant General Counsel for the Department.
Thank you.
R. A. Michelson here representing Robert Ingram.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
And today, since the Secretary is a moving party, the Secretary will go first. Mr. Schuler, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
All right. Please proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court. The Secretary asked the Court to reconsider its decision in Ingram v. Nicholson. Just over a year ago at oral argument in this case, the Secretary asked the Court to apply the Federal Circuit's then recent holding in Andrews v. Principi and hold that a failure by VA to adjudicate any reasonably raised Section 1151 claim in 1986 is properly remedied through a Q motion. The Court disagreed, and in Ingram held that a reasonably raised claim remains pending absent an explicit adjudication. Within 2 weeks of that decision, the Federal Circuit held in Vezotel v. Nicholson, in a procedural context nearly identical to that present in this case, that where the veteran files more than one claim at the same time, and the RO decision acts on one but not the other, the second claim is deemed denied and the appeal period begins to run. In so doing, the Federal Circuit, without qualification, applied and affirmed Andrews. In reconsidering Ingram, the Secretary asked the Court to apply Desotel and find that the remedy for a failure to adjudicate one of several claims or of any claims filed at the same time in 1986 is either a timely notice of disagreement within 1 year of that decision, which was not done in this case, or a Q motion attacking the finality of that 1986 decision.
Counselor, can you edify me and tell me which regulation or statute the Circuit Court was addressing or interpreted in Deschotel?
The holding is specifically premised in the footnote by Section 7105 B1 of the Code, or the United States Code, which indicates that a notice of disagreement must be filed within 1 year of a rating decision, or a notice of a rating decision. In doing so, they were clearly contemplating and understanding the notice requirements of what it was doing. It didn't include an exhaustive discussion of other statutes and regulations concerning notice, specifically such as 38 CFR 3.103, but it clearly understood the concept of that it was what it was applying, that it was establishing the finality of a rating decision and saying that he had 1 year within that time to file his notice of disagreement.
You're familiar with that court's precedent that says basically that unless it's specifically addressed, the case is not precedential in terms of interpretation of those regulations.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the issue I'd like to hear some more about, if possible.
Well, Your Honor, there's no way around the fact that the Federal Circuit did not specifically have an exhaustive discussion of that. The Secretary's position is that the Circuit understood what it was that its holding was premised on notice. And the notice, I think they're looking at the idea of a rating decision and the application in a subtle but fundamentally different manner than what appellant is doing in this case, as this court did in Ingram. I think the decision in Ingram clearly contemplates the idea that there is an explicit, whenever there's a, whatever discrete claim is out there, requires an explicit adjudication and an explicit notice. The Federal Circuit, I think, is looking at it a little bit differently and seeing an application with several claims involved. And they're seeing, that's an important distinction, they're seeing an application that can contain multiple claims within it. The Circuit has talked about that in the past in Barrera, for example. And in doing so, adjudication on one of those claims, I think the Circuit is saying, is an adjudication on the application. if it didn't go through an exhaustive or didn't adjudicate another implied claim that it didn't see, the time for filing a notice of disagreement is within 1 year of doing so. And this court has talked about that context of an application containing multiple claims in cases such as Velez and Slater and Eisenbart, where the court said that a notice of disagreement could be filed within against a claim or a rating decision for a failure to adjudicate.
One of the areas that causes me some consternation is the fact that the ROs don't use docket numbers. So it is logical to me that a portion of a claim could be immediately granted or denied just on the face of it, you know, after some research. However, a portion of that same claim could be referred for further development and study and so forth. And it seems to me that you would clog up your system if the veteran is placed at this choice that he's not heard anything about claim number two, even though it may be being developed under a separate theory, and start to appeal prematurely. It bothers me that they show tell may have some unintended consequences down line for those of you and for those of us who understand how it really operates down at the RO level. Could you address that for me, please?
Well, I think you're right, Your Honor, that it, because of that fundamental but I think significant difference between how the Federal Circuit is looking at this and how Ingram looks at it or how Pellin is, that it raises this question of at what point has the RO finally adjudicated any number of claims? And in this case, I'm not sure it doesn't really come up in this case. I think your question goes to some that are concerns outside of the facts here. In this case, we had an application with a rating decision, notice of that decision with a denial. There's no doubt he could have known that there was a denial of his application without any action within 1 year. I think your question kind of goes to the next question of what do we do after that if the RO is actually taking action outside. And that's really not what's going on in this case. I think Desotel raises a lot of questions outside of the facts that are narrowly applicable here that really fit very closely in with Desotel and the line that it traces through Andrews and Roberson.
Maybe the application of Deschotel is limited to Deschotel.
I don't think that's so. I think that it's applicable for claims filed at the same time. In Desotel, the claims were a service connection claim and a secondary service connection claim from the same documents. Clearly, the Desotel its holding is rather sweeping. It says at the same time. Two claims or more filed at the same time. It's not qualified by the type of claims. It's not qualified in any other way. And so I think it's got greater applicability than just Desotel. And I think it has applicability in Mr. Ingram's appeal because his appeal came from one single application informed by some documents around that application and with an adjudication soon thereafter on that application. And it was a firm denial. He knew that it was a denial without any action within 1 year. That fits very closely with Andrews and Desotel.
But if that's the reading of Desotel, then to get back to Judge Lance's question, doesn't that raise the situation where a claimant files four or five different claims that result from different events in a lengthy period of service, hears from VA only as to one of those, and it's a denial? Doesn't that raise an implication for the system that if you read Desotel as saying that's a deemed denial as to all the others, then you have to file a notice of disagreement, then the system has to respond with a statement of the case, et cetera? What's your answer with regard to those implications of what we're talking about here?
I think the implications that that he has to file a notice of disagreement on the failure to adjudicate, am I correct in the questioning?
Yes.
Yes. That's the premise of Velez and Slater and Eisenbart, that is the procedural posture in which a claimant in that circumstance can challenge directly that.
Now, are you drawing a distinction between the failure to adjudicate and the deemed denial language in Desotel?
No, I think they work together. That's why I think that Desotel actually works together with the line of cases that indicates that you can disagree with the failure to adjudicate. If it was, if there is, as we think in this case, or assuming that there is a claim and that there's no explicit adjudication and they had it within a year of that notice provided a indication that you didn't adjudicate my claim there, I'm disagreeing with the failure to adjudicate. Most likely what would happen is that the RO would either say, oh yeah, there was a claim back there, we'll adjudicate that, or would see the notice of disagreement as a claim for, in this case, 1151 benefits. And so just the act of disagreeing there likely prompts the system to go back into its normal operation and have an adjudication of that 1151 claim. It's the circuit's concern, is their policy concern is pretty clearly on the finality issue. And seeing the failure, or seeing the application as a cluster of claims with a specific adjudication on that application without any action afterwards.
Now, do you read this hotel then as unaffected by 5104's notice requirements? Or is this hotel somehow limited to the period before 5104 became law?
No, I think it's more broadly applicable. I don't think the answer changes depending on the 1990 Veterans Benefits Amendments Act and the more stringent requirements at that time. There's all of them clearly indicate a notice of a decision or a determination, which a rating decision is what that is. It's the failure to adjudicate within that application that's the issue here that becomes the deemed denied language.
Well, I'd like to address then the language in 5104 and the pursuing regulations. How then do you feel that a rating decision that only addresses one claim out of four or five potentially filed, as in the scenario that Judge Moorman described, could comply with 5104 when it doesn't provide the reasons for the denial of the other four claims?
I think in the circumstance where we have them all filed at the same time, as for example Mr. Ingram's appeal, where there's an application form with informed by some documents, the rating decision clearly indicated, at least in this case, that there was a denial of disability benefits, and then there was a more detailed discussion of the denial of pension benefits, of that he was not permanently disabled. And so the question of notice of a decision is, I think, what 5104 goes to, and that's when you notify of the rating decision that goes to that. The question I think Des Hoteaux gets to is what's inside that as a the notice of each explicit claim. Each distinct claim gets an explicit
explanation.
And an explicit notice. When VA sees a claim, that's what it does. It gives an explicit adjudication, especially more recently after these amendments, where it enumerates down through rating decisions this claim, that claim, and the next. The more difficult circumstances when VA does not see a claim, and in those circumstances, there not only won't be an explicit adjudication, there can't be a notice we didn't see the claim, because we said we either don't agree that there is a claim.
But under your scenario or your reading, then VA doesn't necessarily need to provide a reason for each claim that it's denied out of the four or five in the application, because if it's denied one and is silent to the rest, then the appellant or the claimant is supposed to assume that the agency has denied all of them. Well, and I'm just wondering how that kind of denial would comply with the statutory obligation to provide an explanation as to why the other claims were denied.
Well, I think we start with the premise that the whole premise of the application of Des Hoteaux and Andrews is that VA did not recognize an implied claim of some sort. And so the decision, the adjudication won't include it, and nor will the notice.
Well, then how can a claim be deemed denied if there was no claim recognized at all?
I think because the Federal Circuit is looking at this not as each discrete claim gets a discrete and distinct adjudication, but as an application, because they all came in at the same time. That adjudication gets that application gets a explicit adjudication based on what VA saw in its application and how it adjudicated the claim. And then it notifies the agency, the appellant, of that rating decision.
Wouldn't that actually be a denial, not deeming a denial?
a denial of the application. I think that would be another way to put it. I think the Federal Circuit is seeing it like that, as opposed to looking back and seeing requiring explicit denials. They're seeing that there was an adjudication on the application. We indicated through the notice what the agency saw and what, and we're communicating that to the appellant. He then has that opportunity, and an opportunity which he has better knowledge than VA does as to what he intended to apply for. The application for service-connected benefits or for reopening generally requires an element of intent. And so he's in a position to understand, gee, if VA made a mistake and didn't see a claim that I intended to put there, that's an opportunity to disagree with the adjudication at that moment.
But doesn't that transfer a substantial burden to the claimant that prior to Des Hotel, at least your reading of Des Hotel, was a burden that the secretary picked up with regard to at least indicating to the veteran what new and material evidence might constitute new and material evidence. Here, silence tells the veteran nothing with regard to whether or not he possesses that evidence that would be new and material as far as VA was concerned.
I think that the point, if we're looking at from a premise of each explicit claim requires an explicit adjudication, that's a logical inference. But I don't think what the circuit is saying, and they're trying to reconcile Des Hotel to the statutes and the regs and understanding it. I think they're coming at it from a different standpoint. They're coming at it from, there's an application with multiple claims, and he has an opportunity at that point to, it doesn't change the burden, I don't think, for him, his element of intent to apply for benefits or to disagree. The burden's on him in all cases to disagree in any adjudication. It does obviously change the point at which finality attaches, which obviously changes when Q is the appropriate remedy or not, and obviously Q is a higher burden than a pending claim doctrine. There's no doubt about that. So it changes that aspect of it, but I don't think it shifts the burdens at that earlier stage of his opportunity to say VA failed to adjudicate something that I intended to apply for.
Well, Counselor, if we're going to change the nomenclature from claims to application, how long is it going to take to implement that and to notify the veterans community that we've changed the way of doing business substantially over the years?
That one I really have no answer for. The Andrews wrote the line of cases from Andrews, Roberson through Des Hotel is complex, and it's taken the Secretary some time to understand that. The Secretary, I'd like to remind the Court, went into Andrews arguing that the pending claim doctrine was the appropriate remedy in these types of circumstances. It was the appellant in that case that argued that it was the Q was the appropriate remedy. The government disagreed, and the Federal Circuit disagreed with the government. In Des Hotel, the roles were shifted, and it was the appellant in that case who argued that pending claim was the appropriate remedy, and the government said, no, Andrews has spoken on this. It doesn't matter, at the Federal Circuit's level at least, which party advocates to which remedy, the circuit's rule comes out as the deemed denied with the appeal period running.
But why would, in the context of that factual background where it appears that both appellants and the secretary have been on the same side with regard to the issue, and this Federal Circuit announces a rule that at least in its broadest application would run substantially contrary to that common perspective at one time, why would it not make sense for this court to apply Des Hotel very, very narrowly?
I think if the court did apply it narrowly, and there are some points of distinction, as I mentioned earlier, some areas in which it's not quite clear how far Des Hotel goes. We've argued that Andrews and now Des Hotel really supplants the pending claim doctrine. But even if we accept a distinction the court created in Ingram over the timing of the informal claim for TDIU as before or after the scheduler rating, or on some other factual basis, for example, the claims weren't filed at the same time. In this case, it fits squarely within the Des Hotel Andrews Roberson line of cases. The claim was filed in 1986, or the two claims allegedly filed in 1986 in an application informed by some documents around it. Andrews was almost exactly a similar fact pattern, the original application for benefits with evidence of TDIU at the same time. And Desotel was similar, except in a reopening context, which doesn't really change the dynamics of this. So even if we read it narrowly, Ingram fits within that.
I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the remedy that you argue is that Mr. Ingram should pursue, which would be a Q claim. Based upon the very restrictive nature of a Q claim, how would you see an appellant who argues years later that he had filed a claim that the agency had failed to adjudicate being able to prosecute such a claim and even potentially win it?
As I mentioned earlier, I think it would make that effort much, it would make more difficult. There's no doubt the change in the finality, the point at which finality attaches, shifts his burden, and he's going to have to show not just that there were claim filed, but also that he would have prevailed under the evidence
right,
and law.
Right, without the benefit of the duty to assist that would have followed if the agency had recognized a claim in the first place.
In certain circumstances, that's exactly, you're right. That is the implication of the circuit's holding, is that there's no escaping the fact that it makes that path for a claimant much more difficult.
Counselor, this may be a little broader than everybody wants to get into, but fundamental due process. If you have a claim or you think you have a claim pending, don't you think you're entitled to be told that either it was granted, is under review, or has been denied before your clock starts on your appellate time?
I agree, and I think the system broadly, in a uniquely pro-veteran system is this, must work in that way. And I don't think the Federal Circuit's decision, Desotel, though, is outside of the bounds of that. And as we've been discussing, the way the Secretary has attempted to try to understand Desotel as it fits within that broad process is that it's seeing this application with multiple claims inside that is adjudicated by the 1986 Brady decision. That's the point at which he has notice. If we see, as we mentioned before, every implied claim, whenever it's ever seen, whether it's right away or many years later, requires an explicit adjudication, we're going to logically come to a different result. But the only way to reconcile Desotel in that context, I think, is to see that rating decision as within the notice context, the uniquely proclaimant in the uniquely proclaimant system. That's the way to see it.